Speaking of Liberty. The National Broadcasting Company presents another in this new series of programs under the auspices of the Council for Democracy. There was free talk in the old New England town hall, and there's free talk by free men every week at this time. Free talk led by your host, Rex Stout. You may know Rex Stout as the brain parent of that distinguished criminologist, Nero Wolfe. On this program, you will get to know him as an outspoken champion of the democratic way of life. Mr. Stout.
Thank you, William Abernathy. Sweet land of liberty. When I used to sing that phrase, off-key of course, in a little Kansas schoolhouse, it was merely a noise. As I say it now, if I sang it, I'm afraid it would still be off-key. It is at once a prayer, an affirmation, a resolution, and a challenge. Sweet land of liberty, our America. But it is not, thank God, the only land of liberty left on earth. Not the least of the others is the one furthest removed from us in space, but in spirit one of the closest, China. Our spiritual kinship with the Chinese has not been the deliberate product of statecraft or commercial enterprise. We like them, that's all. Beyond politics and commerce, we have always been interested in China. We've tried to help it develop modern techniques. We've trained its young men and women, and we have hoped to see it establish on a firm basis a sister democracy.
One moment, if you please. May I interrupt?
You may indeed, Dr. Lin. But first, let me introduce you. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Lin Yutang, noted Chinese philosopher and writer, author of With Love and Irony, Moment in Peking, and The Importance of Living. Now, Dr. Lin.
I only wanted to observe that while China acknowledges with gratitude her great debt to America, she is perfectly willing also to acknowledge with pride America's debt to her.
No wonder we like the Chinese. Not to be outdone, Dr. Lin, let me say that one item in that debt is the fact that the Chinese took the first stand in the present struggle against aggressors.
That is true, Mr. Stout. Though not what I had in mind. Do you ever visit the Metropolitan Museum of Art here in New York?
Now here, Carl Van Doren asked me that same question. Is this a conspiracy?
Oh, not a malicious one. There's a special exhibition at the museum now called The China Trade and Its Influences. It shows very clearly, I think, what a tremendous effect China has had on American art and the whole field of aesthetics, even on American philosophy.
I haven't seen that exhibition. But I do know that up in New England, around Salem and Marblehead and New Bedford, you can find Canton china plates and bowls and old wallpaper that came halfway around the world on the Yankee clipper ships.
And there's also Chippendale furniture. But I would rather we get back to the interchange of ideas of democracy. You understand, Mr. Stout, that I do not mean for one moment to deny all that China owes to the United States.
I do understand. There are entries on both sides of the ledger.
One might say, with entire truth, that they who were the young China of 1910 have become China's elder statesmen of today. And many of the young men and women, most of them in fact, who made up the young China movement of a generation ago, were trained in American schools and colleges. They acquired the best American education and then went home to apply what they had learned.
Would it be correct to say that those same men and women are responsible for the new development of democracy in China?
Ah, that's something else. Perhaps they are responsible for developing something new. And perhaps, on the other hand, they are merely helping to liberate something that has always been a part of the Chinese spirit.
And you'd say the Chinese character and temperament is inherently inclined to democracy.
I mean, Chinese democracy is, or was, so different from American democracy, but the spirit is the same. Perhaps I may put it this way. China is a new republic, but a very old democracy, the oldest self-governing nation in the world.
Now, wait a minute. You're pulling my leg.
No, I'm quite serious. There's been a lot of nonsense said about democracy, confusing the superficialities of political machinery, senators, and electioneering with the basic spirit of democracy. When you speak of American democracy, you do not mean the senators in Washington. Would you say, Mr. Stout, that the senators are the cream of American democracy?
It all depends. You'd have to name your senators. Anyhow, you can't have cream without milk. And the milk is the people, all of us.
We are getting somewhere now. By democracy, we simply mean a state consisting of free individuals morally capable of governing themselves, independent in spirit, tolerant, and at the same time ready to revolt against oppression. And they must have a basic philosophy that all men are equal. Democrats mustn't be snobs, that's about right.
Well, make it shouldn't. Room for improvement. We have a snob or two in America, Dr. Lin.
Well, in China, too, of course. But basically, the Chinese and the Americans hate snobbery. Remember, there's no caste system in China. Mencius long ago said that all men are created equal and that any man is capable of development to the moral stature of the Saint Emperors. Now, that was about 2,500 years ago. Mencius further said that in a state, the people are the most important factor and the king is the least important, just in so many words. Now, that statement stands in the Chinese classics that every Chinese schoolboy for the last 1,000 years was required to learn. Mencius is as modern as Thomas Jefferson, and the basis of this is Chinese humanism.
But wasn't there an aristocracy in ancient China?
Decidedly not. There is a Chinese proverb which says, all premiers and generals don't come from old families, which isn't true of England, you know. Because there was the imperial examinations for civil service, which was in operation for over 1,000 years and made it possible for any poor boy with real talent to rise to the very top by selective service. Now, we didn't say in China that any boy might become the president, but we did say that any boy might become the premier.
And you maintain that the Chinese people really have been governing themselves for a long time, centuries?
Precisely. Now, whether there was a Chinese or a Manchu emperor, didn't matter. The people always govern themselves through the village system in connection with the clan elders, corresponding somewhat to your city aldermen. Life in the Chinese country was more or less like life in Vermont. And it is important to point this out because no democracy can work unless the spirit of true democracy already exists among the common people, the peasants and the scholars. The machinery of modern democracy may be new, but the spirit is very old.
Can you put it into a definition, Doctor? How would you define democracy?
Well, Mr. Stout, it's one of those things very hard to define. But to me, democracy is the embodiment of all those normal rights, liberties, and dignities pertaining to free men. And like a good many things, it is appreciated most in absentia as under a tyranny.
You never miss the water till the well runs dry.
Yes, but it goes against the grain of human beings not to be free. And therefore, sooner or later, we must come back to that pattern of free men living in free countries, which we call democracy. And this was the lesson of the history of China. The more centuries China lived, the more universal became the conviction among Chinese scholars that no tyranny could survive. East or West, no tyrant has ever survived his people, and it is the people who survive the tyrant. And China knows that, Mr. Stout.
And knowing it, has kept up her fight against Japanese brutality for 4 long years, always sure of victory in the end.
Yes. We Chinese have never tolerated a tyrant.
Never? That's news to me, Dr. Lin. You say China never had tyrants even in the old days?
Not quite, Mr. Stout, but I said that she has never tolerated them. Sooner or later, the Chinese people always rose in revolt against tyrants and chopped off their heads.
That sounds rather old-fashioned, but more forthright and effective than such modern methods as appeasement.
Yes, quite effective. You see, the Chinese, after all, are not so very different from Americans. They're great individualists. They're essentially tolerant. They like liberty. They want to be free. They don't like to pay taxes, except when taxes are plainly necessary to preserve that liberty. They don't like to see soldiers in their villages. They tolerate, but don't like law courts. All they want is that a man should be allowed to live his own life with his family.
Well, hasn't there been any theory in China corresponding with the divine right of kings?
Well, Mr. Stout, since even the gods in China are quite human, it follows that I think that nothing can be very divine in China. Chinese historians developed very early the theory of the right to revolt. The king was supposed to rule the people on behalf of heaven by what we call a mandate from heaven. But at the same time, the theory was also clearly developed that any king who abused his power by oppressing the people forfeited thereby that mandate and became a common man, subject, as I say, to having his head chopped off.
Very convenient and quite occidental. Charles I of England and Louis XVI of France had their heads chopped off, too. But how is democracy working in China right now?
Well, China represents today democracy under stress, a nation driven backward by invasion and blockade. And China has discovered that in the time of crisis, of national peril, her strength lies in unity and in an extension of democracy. I speak now of the amazing growth of Chinese cooperatives.
I've heard about the cooperatives. Isn't there a man named Rui Ali?
Yes. He's been one of the leaders, Mr. Stout, but the support and growth has come from the Chinese people themselves. China has had to rebuild her economic life under the hardest possible conditions. Her coast was blockaded by an enemy fleet, which meant that most of her richest cities were occupied. And in those same cities, in the coastal provinces, back of them, were practically all of China's industry, and all of her universities and her medical centers. The government retreated to Chongqing, and the life of China went inland with it. Soldiers, civilian refugees, factory workers, engineers, doctors, all who could escape, headed for the vast interior. It was pioneering, Mr. Stout, just such pioneering as you Americans did when your covered wagons went westward 100 years ago.
With the difference that our pioneers were harassed only by natural difficulties and a few thousand Indians, whereas yours had the whole Japanese army behind them and airplanes above them.
Yes, a big difference. Yet the spirit of the people was somewhat the same. They were free men, determined to set up new homes, to make a new life under difficulties. What our people did was to produce supplies for themselves and for the soldiers in thousands of small cooperative workshops. Small, scattered factories couldn't be bombed out as easily as big industries. Refugees and wounded soldiers had a chance to help rebuild China and make it possible for our armies to continue to resist the enemy. It's guerrilla industry as well as guerrilla warfare, you see.
To keep it a land of liberty. As a philosopher, Dr. Lin, you probably saw that there was a close relationship between the new order the fascists in the Far East were proclaiming and the new order of the Nazis in Europe long before some of the rest of us did. The striking thing is that the methods are so similar. Ruthless use of force, propaganda to disunite the people, setting up of puppet regimes. The pattern's identical.
Yes. The war is global in character. It extends around the world. And everywhere, the cause of free men is our own cause. Only by all the free nations acting together, without appeasement, and without division of counsel, can the cause of free men win.
As it must, and shall. Thank you, Dr. Lin. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest today is Dr. Lin Yutang. This is Rex Stout saying goodbye until next week.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard another in a new series of programs entitled Speaking of Liberty, brought to you each Thursday night at this time by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the Council for Democracy, a national organization dedicated to the propagation of an American faith in democracy. Next week, Rex Stout will bring to the microphone Miss Fanny Hurst. A copy of this broadcast will be mailed free to anyone requesting it. Please address your letter or card to the Council for Democracy, 285 Madison Avenue, New York City. Speaking of Liberty has been presented as a public service by NBC and the independent radio stations associated with the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.